Congress convenes tomorrow in Washington. It's a new Congress, the 109th, with stronger Republican majorities in both the House and the Senate. Republican leaders hope to use those majorities to pass everything from tax reform to changes in Social Security. First, however, they are considering changes in the rules by which they govern themselves. NPR's Andrea Seabrook is back for another term at the Capitol, and she joins us now. Good morning, Andrea.
Morning, Steve.
So what will lawmakers be deciding before the session even starts?
Right. Tonight, they're holding a private session behind closed doors, just the Republicans, to talk about changes in House rules that their leadership has proposed. The most controversial of those changes is the rules of the House Ethics Committee. That's the panel that investigates lawmakers when there is a complaint about their conduct. The new rules would relax the committee's process somewhat. And also, Speaker Dennis Hastert is also deciding if he'll replace the current chairman of the Ethics Committee, Joel Hefley. Also, Republicans will decide whether to make the Homeland Security Committee permanent. It's just been a temporary committee since it was established in the wake of the September 11th attacks.
These relaxing of the ethics rules, this comes after Republican leaders have already relaxed the rules for their own party's leaders, right?
Yes, that's true. Late last session, the 108th, they changed their leadership rules so that a lawmaker who has been indicted, can serve in the Republican leadership. That's aimed squarely at House Republican leader Tom DeLay. Several of his associates in Texas have been indicted by a grand jury looking into allegations of campaign finance violations. DeLay was admonished several times by the House Ethics Committee in the last session as well, and that's what's gotten the current chairman of the Ethics Committee into some hot water.
NPR's Andrea Seabrook will be covering the Republican meetings tonight. And Andrea, stay with us. I'm going to bring in NPR's David Wellna, who also covers Congress. And David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Let's look at the Senate side here. The Senate has the job of confirming or not confirming, if they so choose, the president's cabinet nominees that he's named over the past few weeks. Which of those hearings and votes might make news as you see it?
Well, Steve, I think the one that's most likely to make news is the confirmation hearing on Thursday for White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez, whom President Bush has nominated to replace John Ashcroft as Attorney General. Now, Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee are expected to have some pretty sharp questions for Gonzalez about a series of White House memos he supervised that appear to sanction the use of torture during interrogations of suspected terrorists. Those tough questions are unlikely to derail Gonzalez for the Attorney General post, but they might make it more difficult for Mr. Bush later to nominate him for the Supreme Court, which is something many people are expecting. Now, this is the first of what are likely to be many contentious hearings by the Judiciary Committee during this Congress.
And, of course, we should mention an important rule here having to do with the filibuster. Democrats are in the minority. They can stop nominations and other motions in the Senate if they like. Republicans have threatened to change the rules, so they can't. When do we find out which tactics each side will use?
As you said, Senate Democrats have used the filibuster, and they used it 10 times to block 10 federal appeals court nominees in the last Congress. And President Bush has now pretty defiantly renominated most of those nominees, almost daring the Democrats to use the filibuster again. And the biggest battle, though, is likely to take place when there's a vacancy on the Supreme Court, which could happen soon since Chief Justice William Rehnquist is expected to retire soon due to illness. Senate Republicans are saying they won't allow more judicial nominees to be filibustered and may seek to do away altogether with judicial filibusters. And if they do, Democrats warn they will rue the day.
We've been talking a lot about process here. Let's talk a little bit about substance as well, David. What are lawmakers saying about the president's plan to remake Social Security?
They're saying that this is much ado about nothing. They're saying that the president is calling this a crisis when, in fact, Medicare is in much more serious financial straits and ought to be dealt with before Social Security is tampered with. They also say that this is in effect, gutting a social safety net that's really an insurance program and turning it into private investment accounts that would increase the risk for individuals facing retirement. They say that they are going to fight this. Republicans are pretty much closing ranks behind the president, but even among them, there are divisions about just how this should be paid for, because there may be up to $2 trillion in transition costs if people are allowed to divert some of what they're paying right now into Social Security into private retirement accounts, because people drawing on Social Security still have to get their benefits from somewhere.
And these costs come at a time of budget deficits, right, Andrea Seabrook?
Yes, they do. And the deficit is becoming a bigger problem with every spending bill, every new measure like the Social Security measure, even the Iraq War. These funding issues are becoming a bigger political problem because of that, too. And, of course, that affects how Congress is going to be able to deal with, say, an aid package for the victims of the tsunami.
David, how much spending can we expect to see on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan this coming year?
Well, you know, that spending is all beyond the more than $400 billion that have been appropriated for this fiscal year for the Defense Department. So the White House is expected to very soon request what's called emergency supplemental spending for Iraq and Afghanistan to the tune of at least $70 billion, but more likely somewhere above $100 billion. And that's in addition to the $110 billion that Congress has approved in the past year for fighting those wars. And some lawmakers are getting pretty nervous about this off-budget spending since it's all driving up deficits that much higher.
Off-budget means it's beyond the budget, which was already in deficit, which means that every dollar is borrowed.
That's true, and some of that money is taken from the surplus of Social Security payments right now. They're taking in more money for Social Security than they're putting out, and that's supposed to be put aside, but instead it's being used to finance deficits. The other way they're financing these deficits is by selling Treasury bills, and not just Americans, but many foreign countries are buying those up, and the country is becoming more beholden to them because of that.
And very briefly, the president is also hoping for more tax cuts.
That's true. He wants to make permanent the tax cuts that he passed in 2001 and 2003. They were temporary then. He wants to make them again permanent now, which would put an even bigger dent in the Treasury over the coming years.
And Andrea, I want to end this conversation by asking about a member of Congress who will not be joining his fellow members as the session begins. Robert Matsui of California died over the weekend at the age of 63. And here's a man with an interesting life story.
He was a Japanese American. He and his family, when he was an infant, were put in an internment camp during World War II. Matsui later became a powerful Democrat in Congress, representing Sacramento, California. He was soft-spoken, he was kind, and he was one of the top members of the Ways and Means Committee, a major player on Social Security issues, exactly those. He'll be missed by his colleagues for that and many other reasons in the coming months.
And Matsui's death comes on the same weekend as the death of a former member of Congress. Shirley Chisholm was the first black woman elected to Congress and also ran for president in 1972. We're remembering her elsewhere in the program. Andrea, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Steve.
NPR's David Welna is also covering Congress and will be in the coming years. David, thank you.
You're quite welcome, Steve.
And the 109th Congress begins tomorrow.